Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. Today, I'm very happy to invite our special guest, Zenon, to talk with us. Hello, Zenon.
Hello.
So, Zenon is a senior at the University of California in San Diego. He's studying biology, and he's in the process of applying to medical school. He's currently shadowing me at Centerpoint Medicine. That's how we got to know each other. He likes playing badminton and tried to learn how to surf before he became too busy. And he is excited about moving on to the next chapter of his life as he's being graduated from college. He wants to be involved in research in medical school. And I want to talk to you, Zenon, because not only are you a college student, but you're a former teenager growing up in the 21st century. And I just published the book, The Life Guide for Teens. So I want to pick your brain about the challenges that face teens today that we didn't have to face 20 or years ago, or even before that, obviously. So let's start. Can you tell us a little bit about how you came about to wanting to go into medicine? What did that process play into?
For me, medicine kind of started as an option. I was like a dream early in my childhood when I kind of saw my older family members going through a lot of health issues. And I saw like the doctors really help them through it, and occasionally when they went through really hard times, save them and give them a couple extra years of life. So after seeing that, I was really struck by like the importance of medicine, and I wanted to participate in that. And I kind of continued on that journey until my grandfather passed away. And after he passed, my feelings for medicine kind of went down a bit, because I thought like, oh, they couldn't help him with this illness. And I began to think like, they're not the superheroes that I thought they were. And keep in mind, I was a really young kid at the time, so I didn't really know the ins and outs and all the restraints, but I kind of deviated away from that pathway, and I just started pursuing business as like the first thing that came to mind as an option. And then once I actually entered business school as a undergraduate, I decided like it's too soulless and it wasn't for me. I couldn't envision like myself living that type of life. So I kind of revisited my dreams for medicine, and I transferred and pursued a science degree. And I'm basically at the end of that journey right now, hoping to start a new path in medicine.
So how old were you when you gave up on medicine temporarily?
I think I was about 10 years old. 10 to a 12. It was in that time period, 5th grade.
That's around the same age as, you know, when you're young, your parents are your superheroes and they could do no wrong. And around that age, you realize your parents are human as well and don't have all the answers. Do you remember that? Was it around the same time?
I think it was around that time period, yeah, where I started doubting my parents more.
Yeah, life seems much simpler when you're younger. It's very clear, you know. The doctors are superheroes, the parents know everything, and then you find out, it doesn't work so easily. Did you consider other healthcare-related careers besides medicine?
I did. I looked into other things, but when I found, like, nurses and EMTs, and all of them do great work and are, like, really needed in the healthcare system, they can't really direct patient care. Like, they can't direct the pathway and take responsibility for the whole healthcare, not the whole healthcare, the whole medical plan for the patient. And, like, I felt like having that type of responsibility and knowledge to kind of direct that role would be something I would be more passionate about.
How much thought have you given to how the medical field will change in the next 40 years? I can tell you, we can take a retrospective look at how medicine has changed in the 40 years I've been involved, but have you thought about what could happen next and how you'd fit into that?
I thought a lot about that, especially with the new big technology emergence of AI. I've been thinking about how that would affect specifically like radiology and other similar things, and even surgery with the Da Vinci. And I was thinking how that would affect my future, because in 10, 20 years, I can probably envision like a lot of the surgeries would be conducted by robots, and not like robots without humans. They'll be controlled by like humans, but it would be a completely different way of surgery. And radiology is something I was kind of interested in before, but I'm like kind of worried that that whole entire specialty might get kind of swamped under AI, and it'll just be like a liability where I'm just there to like checkmark each image if I was to go into radiology. So I kind of have thought a lot about that, yeah.
So the Da Vinci machine is a robotic arm that is operated, as I understand it, by a surgeon, could even be remote, not even near the patient. You don't think that would be taken over by AI as well, like simple procedures AI could do?
I think maybe in like 300 years. I don't think not 300 years, maybe 100 years, because right now, like the robots to mimic like the muscular actions of like humans are like really, really bad. They can't even do like a hand properly right now. So I think by the time they can like have an AI completely control the Da Vinci machine, I think that would be way far in the future, beyond my lifespan. But for impact of Da Vinci, I think like most surgeons would have to be familiar with it in the upcoming decade or two, or similar types of machines.
I think you're underestimating the rate of progress. I guess we'll find out in the next 20, 30 years, if I'm right. I mean, I've seen, for example, I saw the internet grow in the last 30 years, from no internet to controlling our lives in many ways, and very rapid progress. So I would be surprised if it's going to take 100 years. But you may be right. There may be limitations that we can't foresee, or that the limitations you see will actually come to be a problem for us. So you thought about medicine because the doctor can direct things. Do you think primary care will be done by physicians in 20 years, or do you think AI will be involved with that?
I think maybe, like, for primary care, I think, sure, in maybe 20 years, AI could be able to fulfill the role. But, again, like, when it comes to, like, doctors, I think they're always going to be necessary, because the companies that produce these AI will never want to be held liable for any of the stuff, even that a primary care doctor would be held liable for. I'm not even sure what that is, but I'm sure there's something. And another aspect of primary care, like, compared to other fields, is, like, mainly comfort-based. And I don't think, like, a lot of people just come into primary care with nothing wrong, just to get comforted by the doctor and, like, feel better, I think. That's, like, one main purpose of that. And I don't think an AI could maybe perform to the same level as that, unless they can, like, perfectly mimic, like, the human emotions, which would be, if they could do that, then they can just replace everything, I guess, so.
Yeah, I don't think they'll mimic human emotions, but I do think, I wrote a position blog on this last year, that I think that primary care might be delivered by, let's say, medical technicians Like we have EMTs, it'll be medical technician on emergency, and they'll follow the AI instruction, but there'll be the human contact. And the beautiful thing about medical technicians is they only take 4 to 6 months to train, and you can, they're cheaper, so you could have a lot more of them. And I think primary care is going to be enhanced by use of medical technicians. You'll still need physicians for difficult cases, but most primary care is comfort care or is reassurance, which I think can be done by an MT. What do you think?
You make a good point, yeah. Using both in that type of way could achieve, like, a really big reduction of costs and free up physicians for more places they might be a little more urgent. So I agree with you.
Right, we're facing a physician shortage already.
Yeah.
So this might help alleviate that. So given all that possibility, and I know you're not even accepted to medical school, but in just imagining what you want to do, what kind of specialization, if any, do you think you might want to look into?
One of the aspects I was really interested in is interventional radiology or ophthalmology. And when it comes to interventional radiology, I really like the use of those X-ray radio scanners while you're doing surgeries would be really interesting and minimally invasive. Like, I can imagine the difference that would make rather than slicing someone open with like one giant line. Having like a little tiny hole would really, I think it would really boost their quality of life afterwards. And ophthalmology is just because I'm kind of interested in eyes and I have a lot of problems with my own. So.
And have you thought about, God forbid, that you don't get accepted to medical school? I was in that kind of boat 45 years ago whenever I applied to medical school. You know, there was a chance I wouldn't get in. What are your backup plans?
Well, my backup plan, considering the degree I have, would probably be just going into research about something that I would find interesting. So I'd have to really find what I find interesting in terms of research and then try to go into that. But I think my backup plan is going to be a little more difficult now because of like the cutting on research in the country. So the jobs might be a little more competitive than before. So it can be not a great thing for me.
Well, I will assure you there will be research. It might be funded differently, but I don't think we're going to stop doing research. Is there a particular research area that you are thinking about, or just broadly? Well, why do you want to do research? What are your thoughts?
I'm pretty interested in like looking into like the boundaries of certain diseases in particular. So I think like right now, if I was going to research, I'd either go into like research about cancer research, or going into like research about ALS and that type of thing. I'm not sure if I would do like, I was thinking maybe I'd go into research in the molecular sense, looking at the genes related to these illnesses and look at the expression patterns. That could be something I could go into. That might be interesting.
Yeah, that's at the forefront of medicine, looking at genetic markers, understanding, for example, with cancer therapy, if you can turn on the genes that control the immune system, you could cure cancer because the immune system, when it works well, it takes care of cancer cells. So that's one example of how genetic manipulation could help in the field. And, of course, in genetically based diseases, if you can turn on correct genes or turn off genes that are not helpful, you can have new ways of treatment. And there's a lot of excitement, a lot of potential in that. And I guess that's what interests you.
Yeah, exactly. Because like my major is more molecular biology. And I haven't really been interested for like 3 years of my undergraduate career, or 2 years, 2 to 3 years, because the classes were just really dry. Like you just take the genetics class and you learn about the basic genetics, Mendelian inheritance and all this stuff. And you just make your tic-tac-toe tables and you fill it in. It's kind of really boring. But once you kind of get into higher level classes and they let you read more papers and you get into the bioinformatics side of things and the data analysis, it gets a little more interesting. So that would be a potential avenue that I'd go down.
So we're talking about college education. I want to actually dive into education with you, both at the college level and maybe high school and elementary school level. I'm really curious about your perspective. But let's start with college, since you mentioned it. What, looking back now, and you don't have the perspective of 30 years from now, and I could pitch in on that, but looking back at what you've done in the college career, if you were in charge of education, would you have changed anything? Like, have you been involved in research as an undergraduate, or what would you have done differently?
For me, I would have definitely gotten... Are you asking, like, what would I have done differently in my college pathway,
yeah,
or what I would change?
If you were in charge of your education, if you didn't have to follow the prescribed curriculum, what would it, how would it have been different than what you went through?
I would definitely try to do less multiple choice tests, because for those types of tests, like I did for my first, I think, 2 to 3 years of my undergraduate, I shoved all the stuff in my head and I flopped it back out on the test and it never came back in. So, like, my first 3 years, even that genetics class I was just talking about, like, if I was going to try to remember the details about that class, I just couldn't. And it kind of went into hand in hand, because when I did my MCAT, and, like, that's the medical school testing you have to get into, I had to basically restudy every single subject I learned in college, which was, like, really ridiculous, since I should have learned all that, but I didn't remember a single thing. So that would be one aspect. And I think, like, research-wise, I think I would try to get, like, every undergraduate biology student to get involved pretty quickly. Because for me, I was trying to get involved, but it's, like, a really tedious process where you have to do your, like, cold emails to 30 people and try to get that one to respond, at least here at UCSD for me. But I think I would try to do that and probably enforce more statistics classes for, like, general knowledge.
There's different models of learning at the college level. There's some colleges where they give you a problem to solve, and then you have to learn math or science to solve the problem. So you learn by doing. Do you think that would have been a more effective way of teaching?
I mean, I think that would be a more effective way of teaching, because it's more application-focused, and I would definitely, even if I don't remember specific little minutia, I would be able to still use that muscle memory in my brain to try to, not muscle memory, I think it would be a much better learning experience to, like, learn to solve something rather than learn to fill in bubbles on a test. I think that's
right, because it's the difference between being an active learner and a passive learner, just absorbing information. When you're active, you have to process and synthesize information. And you're right, the multiple choice tests generally don't do that. You just regurgitate information.
Yeah, I agree.
So Let's go back to high school days, and you actually lived, you were in COVID land during high school, is that right?
My senior year, I was the class of 2020 that was on the forefront of getting the graduation canceled, yeah.
But tell me what that was like.
Okay, yeah. So at first we were all really excited in our senior year, because all of a sudden we had a month off, 2 months off, and we didn't really have to pay it. Like, it was a lot easier. It's basically like another summer during the whole entire school year. Everyone was like really excited for that. And then like the third month rolled around, and like the happiness was starting to die down. The fourth month passed, and we were about to graduate, and we didn't have a graduation. And then after that, like, it just went downhill from there, because like, of course, the pandemic became more serious, and then the isolation started where you couldn't really go outside as much and everything, and then it continued for another year. So like the application process for freshman year of undergraduate was like really ridiculous, because you're just gonna go on Zoom, and it's like no one knew how to do anything or teach on Zoom at all. So like that process was like, started off great, really excited, and then it just kind of went downhill from there.
Do you talk to your fellow students, like in college, do you talk about how COVID impacted your lives?
We didn't really talk about how it impacted our life. Like, I think it was more just like sheer boredom just kind of overwhelmed everyone, and then like you just got locked up and you had to like go on your computer to chat with people, and I guess it made people more depressed. Some people, like for example, me and some friends went to the gym more, so I don't know if they really talked about how it impacted them, like specifically though.
Do you think you were set back academically because of COVID?
Yeah, I think I was set back academically, because no one knew how to teach on Zoom, and it was just a whole mess. No, the professors weren't at fault, they didn't know what to do, but me students really didn't know how to learn on that platform either.
Well, when we come back, I want to take a look into the future of education. We do have Zoom, we do have video platforms, and I want to talk with you about how you might think about revising, like, say, high school education, utilizing the good aspects of what we learned about in COVID, and maybe taking things out that are not terribly useful in high school education. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unger.
Coming attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Unver, special guest, Zenon, a near UCSD grad who is talking with us about the experiences with education during COVID, or the lack of experiences. But I wonder, if we, given that you have, you know, you're finishing college, you went through high school, given technology that we have, not just AI, just access to videos, access to Google searches and the like. How would you revise, or would you revise, let's say, the high school educational curriculum? For example, I always thought that having somebody lecture to you, that's from the days when we didn't have books even, and we had oral communication to get information across. But we live in a different time. Have you ever thought about how education could be different?
Yeah, I thought about that a lot, because the lecture format of teaching, like, originates way back in the day when it was a way for one guy who knew how to read to just talk about a paper. Like, he had a paper in front of them, and there was, like, five people or six people in front of him, and he just regurgitated the stuff on the paper, and then the people who heard it would regurgitate it back, and it's just a way of, like, multiplying the amount of papers they had before many people knew how to write and read. And now that we're using that as a way for education, it's just, like, seems like a really inefficient method. And if I think about, like, the ways that Zoom and videos could be used, I think that we can use Zoom and videos as a way that we can have lectures or lecture-type material in a live way on Zoom, where people can look at the lecture, and then, like, from home or just from anywhere, they can have a lecture, and they can have a remote way where it's just recorded. And then they could actually come into school, and instead of getting lectures in school, they could have, like, problems, hands-on activities and stuff, where they apply the stuff they got from the lecture or the stuff they got from their videos they watched beforehand, and that's when the learning would happen. They could actually apply that stuff in person. That's kind of something I'm thinking about.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, I actually heard that there was a college during COVID that broadcast a lecture, and one of the students wanted to contact the professor. The professor wouldn't respond to the emails. And later, a student found out the professor had died the year before, and they were just like, they were charging money and tuition for showing a lecture of a dead person. kind of absurd, but it tells you, especially with the Zoom format, you can do lectures, or can pre-record lectures. There's no reason not to do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, in terms of activities, can you think now with the advent of AI, what kind of activities you might use as part of education?
With AI?
Sure.
I guess, like, applications of AI with education. I think one of the best things AI can do, if it's, like, sufficiently developed, like it's, like, ChatGPT 5 maybe, or 4 right now, might be able to do it. Like, during studying, you can generate your own questions and your own basic practice sets, and you can use that as a study material. But I think you're asking, like, how do I implement AI into the education curriculum?
Sure. I mean, the sky's the limit. What are your thoughts?
AI in the education curriculum. I feel like if we have, like, a class of maybe 600 students, in these overfilled colleges that's what they are, and there's, like, a lecture hall, and then the teacher is explaining something, and let's say we're still in a lecture format, because I don't see it going anywhere for a while, and the students have questions, but they're intimidated by raising their hand in a 300-person room and then speaking in front of everyone, or there's too many questions, and the professor kind of has to just ignore some and just leave some out of there because he has a time constraint of 50 minutes. I think, like, AI could be used in a way where they could have, like, an education-based AI platform, and that's trained directly on the data that the class is used from. So it's not, like, a general model. It's more of a specific model trained for, let's say, pharmacology. And it's a pharmacology AI model. And they could just type it into their Canvas structure, and let's say it's implemented in the Canvas structure, and the pharmacology AI bot could, like, plop out answers that would be answering their conceptual questions, similar to how the professor would answer them. So I guess that's one way that it could be implemented in a good way.
So like that's like the personal AI for that professor, for that class. I guess I'm thinking that it could create problems. Like, here's a patient, what kind of pharmacological intervention would you consider here? And let students play around with modeling with AI giving them feedback. What do you think of that?
I think that would be a good thing. You said kind of, can you repeat what you said in the beginning? I didn't catch that.
So I'm thinking that AI could create problems, like let's say there's a patient that you have to figure out a pharmacological intervention, or maybe how about it could be cure cancer. think of ways that you might cure cancer and give some ideas that AI is going to give you feedback. Does this make any sense? Does it flow with the current science? For example, we talked earlier about modifying the genes of the immune system, and you can actually test it out with an AI model.
Yeah, exactly. I think some of those simulations that the AI can run can really help, would really be beneficial for students. Like for me, for example, like if I have a question in class, the first thing I do now is like approach it from a different lens, asking ChatGPT, and if it doesn't make sense to me based off like my general understanding, because sometimes they do hallucinate, like I just correct it, and then it helps you delve deeper into the subjects you're learning and like kind of get interested in it more, because it can give you applications and it can give you more details on that the data you're learning can be applied to real world scenarios. And sometimes the classes are not focused on that, and they don't really help you visualize how your knowledge could be used in the real world. And I think AI could be really beneficial in that sense. So I think you're right. And the simulations, I think, are something that would be really exciting if they could actually, because I know there are some models out there, like model simulations, where you can kind of put in something, and it doesn't just output words. It, like, outputs coordinates on like a data plane, and it shows you graphs and stuff, and that would be really interesting too.
Yeah, like in medical school, you can have, or they already have, like dummy, quote unquote, dummy patients, so patients with that has a medical problem, and then you can intervene with however you want to intervene, and it'll simulate what would happen. And as we're having this conversation, I'm remembering 40 years ago, I wrote a simulator of a ventilator, like when you have patients on ventilators, you have to input the parameters of how quickly they ventilated and what pressures you put in. And I wrote a simulator of that to train pediatric residents in manipulating ventilators in an intensive care unit. And it was a cool program. It was very rudimentary. It was 40 years ago, before the internet, before AI. But I can see that, you know, in medical education could really benefit from that kind of hands-on experience.
I agree. Yeah, I think it could.
So as you move forward, you might want to get involved. If you talk about research, get involved in research creating these simulators, because you'll learn a lot in doing so. Well, we'll be right back. When we come back, I want to talk to you about the internet and social media and how it affects people today growing up in the 21st century. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming Attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to CenterPoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar. We're talking to Zenon, who is nearing his graduation from the University of California in San Diego. He wants to go to medical school. And you grew up completely in the 21st century, so social media and internet, that's part of your day-to-day life. It's not getting introduced during your lifetime. Tell me, in interviewing, talking to people about my book, The Life Guide for Teens, I talk a lot about detrimental effects of social media, but from your perspective, tell me what's good about it, what's bad about it, how would you improve the situation?
I think social media, the best thing about social media, and I'm not going to go on about the reels, because the reels is the Instagram reels or the TikTok reels or et cetera and so on. They're not that great. I can't really think of any benefits other than like short-term entertainment, but like it really is a distraction. But I think like the benefit would be like it kind of widens your social network to a degree where you can always keep in contact with people. Like instead of before, like, social media, you'd kind of have to do text messages and emails, but if you kind of are on Instagram, or let's say, for example, Instagram, and you're just posting pictures, like, you can keep your friends up to date with what's going on in your life, and when you visit them, if they don't live close to you, like, you guys can still have, like, a normal conversation. It's not like you've been, even if you've been not talking to each other for 2 years, you can kind of start up the conversation based off recent things you saw on Instagram. So stuff like that kind of helps the cohesiveness of, like, your social group stay together more in a way that's, I think, beneficial for people my age.
Let me ask you about that. So doesn't that overwhelm you because there's so many people, so much information? Let me ask you about that. Don't you get overwhelmed by so much information from different people?
Yeah, I can get overwhelmed at times, but for me, first of all, me in particular, I'm not that online on social media. I don't really use it as often as a lot of my friends and people and acquaintances do. So my information that I get in is not nearly the same level as them. But I think, like, when they get overwhelmed by information, they can just, like, choose not to look at it, or they can just, like, filter it out of their brain, like, if there's so many people posting videos, like, you just click through it really quickly, or you just skip it if you're not interested, and it's something that you can kind of manage by yourself.
I just wonder about it, because we as humans evolved over millions of years. We typically were in groups of 15, 20, 30 people, as we were, like, in tribes and stuff, and there's only a certain amount of people we knew. And then we developed civilization and cities, but even then, within a city, there's a small number of people. Now, with social media, the way you describe it, you're in touch with many more people than you might have been. And I'm not sure, I don't know, that's a question I have. How do we handle it? Is it really beneficial to us, or do we get burned out with it? Do you have any notion about that?
I don't think you get burned out unless there's like the people that you really are kind of, unless there's particular people that burn you out. I don't think it's the actual quantity of information, because it's not like you're plugged into a database and the plugs are directly feeding you information. You basically have like a control panel and you can choose what you want to see. And if you're feeling like maybe you don't want to look at something today, it's not like you have to look at it. You will just maybe look at it another day. And the thing is, with this type of information, like, they're all temporal. So, like, the stories that are on Instagram, for example, they're only there for 24 hours. So if you're not online for that period, or let's say you just want a day off, like, it's not going to build up. That type of stuff won't build up until and the time you come back, it'll be like a information overload. And like you mentioned before, like, the tribal, humans develop this tribal, like, groups. I think, like, the main reason we survive, like, our species, Homo sapien in particular, is because of our socialness. Like, we were able to build civilization, and we were able to, our brains were well adapted to those types of social networks. And I think, like, the internet and the connectivity of the planet right now is just, like, an extension of that aspect of ourselves, where we want to be more connected with other people, and I think that's overall like something that is not negative.
Do you see your peers, some of them have a fear of missing out, so they're going to check Instagram compulsively every day, don't want to miss something?
There are definitely some people like that, but I think there's a lot of people who aren't like that, and I think there you can be easily misunderstood people who don't want to miss out, or people who are just excited to be involved. So while that is true, I think there are some people like that. I don't think it's the majority. And if it is, like, I think it's kind of not a super negative thing.
And have you observed among your peers, people are on their phones all the time, like 8 hours, 10 hours a day or more?
Yeah, I see that all the time. But that isn't even to do with the social media aspect, like connecting to other people. And maybe it's like a degree of it. It's more like the Instagram reels, TikTok reels, and stuff like that, where they just, it can just like capture their attention and for like an infinite time period, because you can just keep scrolling through like the vast amount of data and shorten your attention span more and more. I don't think that's to do really with the connectivity of social media. I think that's to do with their reels and like that type of platform that all these apps have developed, like YouTube Shorts, Instagram Reels, and TikTok. I think that's more of an issue there.
So do you think these are harmful because they waste time or give you a warped view of the world? And if you agree they're not helpful, which I think they're not, because they a tremendous time drainage and you don't get much out of it other than a little bit of entertainment, what can be done about it?
I think it's a form of entertainment, similar to TV shows and movies and stuff, but it's in such a large quantity and it's so readily available. I feel like it's like desensitizing your brain more and more and more. So like if you don't get a stimulus that is like more exciting enough in that moment, or if it draws out for too long, I think that is a really bad thing. I really don't really like reels that much. And I think like what you said is right. And I can't really see of any benefits other than it's just another form of entertainment, but you can't really derive a lot of meaning out of it. So it's a net negative.
And not only is it entertaining, it captures your, like you said, releases dopamine, captures your brain interest, and then real life doesn't give you that same feedback, and you might find real life boring in contrast, which is another point.
Exactly. Yeah.
When we come back, I want to explore with you a bit, given some of the drawbacks of these reels and stuff, what should we as a society do about it, if anything, other than live with the consequences? This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
More than 30,000 children and adults of every race and ethnic group in the U.S. have cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a disease causing long-lasting lung infections, limiting the ability to breathe over time. Dr. Anbar participated in research that helped advance survival of cystic fibrosis patients by more than 20 years. He encourages you to donate to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to help find a cure. It's easy to donate. Go to cff.org. That's cff.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com. Or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar, a special guest, Zenon, a soon-to-be graduate of UCSD. We're talking about dealing with social media and the different highlight reels on TikTok and Instagram, Facebook. What should we do about this as a society? Because this is a problem. I see kids who spend 12, 14 hours a day, and they're not gaining much. It's like COVID, only worse, because it's not going to go away. Do you think we should outlaw use? And like Australia, they outlawed use of electronics before the age of 16. And in China, they have really strong regulations. What do you think we should do in America?
I think, especially when you think of minors and you think of their long-term health, like, I agree with these countries that are, like, heavily restricting these platforms for especially just minors, because, like, for example, in America, we have the issue where we have the iPad kid that was, like, my generation, where the kid would just be on the iPad all day playing their Angry Birds game, even during dinner or out at restaurants. That was, like, my generation's equivalent. And now this generation's equivalent, like, the new earlier-than-me generation, younger-than-me generation, would be at a much worse level with these platforms. So I think, like, China, one of the ways China kind of did it with TikTok, because it originated kind of from that area, is that TikTok in China is purely education focused. So I think you could leverage these platforms in a way where you can, like, push more healthy educational content and restrict other stuff, and, like, that would be a way where you don't have to completely ban the platform and you can still get some entertainment out of it, but it would be linked to some educational purpose that could make these kids want to go out and do something rather than just sit down on their phone and not even pay attention to the world around them. So, like, if it generates curiosity about the world around them.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking of the game Pokemon Go. This gets you moving. I'm thinking also, maybe a little out of the box, but with AI, I wonder if they can make these platforms more interactive, where you have to do something other than scroll, but you have to interact in a fun way. If that could help make it more useful to think about.
I think they already have something like that called chatbots. And these chatbots, I think, are kind of a little dangerous for if you would think about them for kids, because if you think that having a non-interactive platform such as TikTok would be, like, solely taking all their attention the whole day, like, having a chatbot where they could have, like, a virtual imaginary friend named Bob would, like, completely make them not think they need to even live in the real world anymore. They could just play with Bob and talk with Bob and just not even pay attention to their other friends that are in the real world. If they feel like they have an issue with them or there's like some conflict, they can just retreat and talk with Bob and never return to their real world network.
That's really interesting. I know some people have married their ChatGPT, so this kind of connection can occur.
Yeah, and I think like kids would be even more prevalent.
Yeah. So in this last segment, I often ask our guests for three tips that our audience can use. And let me ask the question this way. What three tips would you give an entering college freshman about how to succeed in college? What would you suggest?
My first tip would be to prepare yourself, because like in today's current college like system, I feel like you have to prepare yourself for at least the first 2 years, you're going to be doing general ed classes, and you won't be interested in them unless you have, like, an insane amount of AP credits to kind of skip over them. So I think you have to prepare yourself for the gen ed classes that you're going to take, and you're not going to be finding anything interesting. Let's say you're interested in biology in high school because you saw something interesting in a news article. You're not going to ever get to that type of stuff until maybe your junior year. So you need to prepare yourself for, like, the first 2 years of college, the grind, where you have to go through your writing classes, your humanities classes, just the stuff you don't really want to be doing. And the second tip would be not to stay in your room and study, because that's something I fell victim to. Like, I felt like I needed to study. And to study, the best thing for me to do would just, like, not talk to people and focus on the lecture slides and the YouTube videos. But I feel like the best way to do things would be interacting with your peers, even though it's kind of difficult in class. Like, hey, do you want to study together? I haven't done it often, but I can only recommend other students to not be like me and try to go down that pathway, because, like, building friends within your own major would really help you out. Apart from just your roommates or people you met, like if you have people who have the same work as you, you can kind of work together. And that makes everything a lot easier. And the third thing would be to kind of live a little. I think, like, especially in UTSD, I don't know about other colleges, a lot of students don't really go out and try to experience, like, the nice environment around the campus. Like, we have the beach, we have all this stuff, but I feel like a lot of students might be, again, locked up in their rooms or in the library really trying to focus if that's what they're trying to do. But I feel like getting healthy breaks would really help reduce the burnout that you definitely will feel.
And I would add a fourth tip, which is get involved in extracurricular activities. And to me, my experience at Revelle College at UCSD was that I liked the best was being involved in the newspaper and being an editor and writing articles. And I learned more as part of that than in actual classes. So there are lots of work opportunities, there's volunteer opportunities, there's sports, but do get involved because there's a lot more to life than just what's in the books. When I went to medical school, this is interesting thing. I thought to myself, I better study really hard because maybe I'll learn something that will save somebody's life in the future. And if I don't study it, somebody will die. I catastrophized it. And I started the first 3 weeks of medical school studying till 11 o'clock at night, every night, and I was miserable. because there's more to life than just studying, as you said. And so then I said, okay, well, I'll have to learn it later, but I'm going to take some time to myself, which was really important. And the truth is, like you learned in college, you forget most of what you learn. You have to relearn it again when the time comes. And the best way to learn is by doing. So when you see patients and you're just honest with yourself, I don't like know this, or I don't remember this, then you look it up, and then you remember it because you apply it.
Yeah, I definitely think taking time for yourself and learning through doing would really help you in life, especially, and not just in education.
Exactly right. We just talked earlier about how to improve education. We both agreed that hands-on, and we're winding up with the same kind of idea, that hands-on in college and medical school and beyond, by the way. So when you get into the work life, you want to be hands-on. You don't just do the theory. That's how you best learn, by doing. And, you know, when you do things, you don't always get it right. And that's okay, because you learn from that. And that's part of the learning process, what makes life so much fun.
Yeah, I completely agree with you.
Zenon, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and your insights. And I look forward to hearing from you in the future how you shape the future of education and medicine and research based on your unique background.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome so much. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.